conference.
Thank you very much. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to our quarterly conference call to discuss investing in global mergers and acquisitions for the quarter ended September 30th, 2018. As we have done in the past, we'll first review with you our investment philosophy, portfolio dynamics, and share our thoughts on the M&A environment. Our objectives remain steadfast since we began investing 40 years ago, to compound and preserve wealth over time while remaining non-correlated to the broad equity and fixed income markets. We work to achieve this by investing globally across the spectrum of announced merger transactions. Our portfolios are highly liquid, non-market correlated, and a proven and consistent alternative to traditional equity and fixed income securities. To review, merger returns derive from investing in the narrowing and ultimate closing of the spread between the target's market price, post-deal announcement, and the final deal terms or consideration. The spread is a function of three primary elements: the risk-free rate, your opportunity cost in a riskless investment like U.S. Treasuries, the deal risk or risk premium associated with the deal, which include deal hurdles to completion and the time value of money. These components are evaluated on an ongoing basis within each deal we invest in. Position sizing is determined throughout the life of a deal based on these factors and the risks associated with them. Larger positions are built as deal milestones are met that de-risk the deal, such as securing a financing, a shareholder vote, various regulatory approvals, amongst other elements. This results in our largest positions over time, which we view are low risk, having the least expectation of return due to the spread narrowing and lower volatility as they approach closing. Our teams are experts in analyzing these deal risks. The inherent risk, of course, in all merger investing is a broken deal, not the standard deviation or price variance of the market price movements over the deal timeline. Market volatility, together with our well-researched merger positions, can provide attractive investment opportunities. The daily gyrations of the broad markets in the last week, which we have seen time and time again, highlight investment opportunities for an active merger portfolio like ours. Third quarter deal activity continued its record pace, finishing the first 9 months with $3.3 trillion, up 37% year over year. It is the highest first 9 months recorded since Reuters began tracking it in 1980. Mega deals, those being over $5 billion, added $1.4 trillion to the year-to-date volume.
For our performance, as Jeff mentioned, global deal activity continues to be solid. You mentioned $3.3 trillion. Current wave is global, as evidenced by the cross-border M&A activity that was about $1.3 trillion for the first 9 months, again, making it the strongest period for cross-border deal-making since 2007. Jeff mentioned some of the industries, but you know, it's across a broad spectrum of energy, power, healthcare, technology. Those are a bit more of the active sectors for the first 9 months of the year. Some of the notable deals that we saw announced during the quarter, which we started to take positions in, CA, the old Computer Associates, developer of software used to manage computer networks and databases, agreeing to be acquired by Broadcom for $44.50 a share in cash. Super Value, a grocery wholesaler retailer, they agreed to be acquired by Natural Foods wholesaler United Natural Foods for $32.50 per share in cash. That deal actually just closed this past week. Energen Corporation, it's an oil and gas E&P company operating in the Permian Basin of West Texas, New Mexico, agreeing to be acquired by Diamondback Energy for about $9 billion in stock. SodaStream, which manufactures and markets home carbonation systems used to convert tap water into sparkling water, agreeing to be acquired by Pepsi for $144 a share, about $3 billion. So just to name a few. As far as performance, July was started out as challenging, although we talked about this in our last call when it became clear that it was a strong possibility that China was going to stall Qualcomm's acquisition of NXP Semiconductors. They didn't receive the clearance from China as we had talked about in our last call on July 25th. We had spoken about this deal. We thought that was both strategically and financially compelling for Qualcomm, and we had expected the beneficial commitments made by Qualcomm to China that should have incentivized the regulators to approve the deal before the deadline. But obviously it was impacted by the current global trade dynamics that are going on, particularly between the U.S. and China. While the outcome was disappointing for us, again, our diversified approach to portfolio construction that seeks to minimize adverse impacts from deal terminations, and we believe this approach helped protect our performance in, during the, that month of July where the deal was terminated. I think offsetting that during the quarter, we saw a successful conclusion to a bidding war for Sky PLC. Paulo has spoken about this deal since it was announced over a year ago, and we saw the successful conclusion of that bidding war during the quarter. Just a reminder, we first initiated a core position when the deal, when Sky was agreed to be acquired at 10.75 back in December 2016, and the winning bidder, which was then now Comcast, outbidding Fox, which will be Disney, came in at 17.28. So here we were doing a deal that was at a spread to the 10.75, and we saw a bidding war that we didn't expect at 17.28. Sort of, in a given year, we see deals that may break, and we look to have deals like a Sky, which can help offset that, which we saw during the quarter, and definitely helped us remain positive during the quarter. And that deal has been just completed. Other, I think, benefits or highlights, I should say, is Aetna, which I think Willis spoke about this deal last quarter. The spread narrowed as the discount to the price that CVS is acquiring after they received Department of Justice approval to sell their overlapping Medicare Part D assets to resolve antitrust concerns. They still need some state regulatory approvals, which I think maybe Willis will give us an update on in a moment, but it continues to be a position for us and still expecting that deal this year. And consequently, in August, Shulman was acquired by Lionel Bassel for $42 a share in cash. In this deal, we actually were also receiving a CBR link to ongoing litigation over an acquisition that Shulman made in 2015. And based on how the court case is going, we expect to receive a payment from the CBR as well when that is settled. Other highlights, Express Scripts, that deal spread narrowed as well. They also received Department of Justice approval for their merger with Cigna. Again, they're still awaiting approval from state insurance companies, and we expect that deal to hopefully close later this quarter. So that was the highlight of the quarter. October, against the backdrop of weaker markets, we've seen some challenges and some headwinds as spreads have begun to have widened. But as Jeff mentioned, we think that the recent widening and that increase in deal risk premiums does present an attractive opportunity to add and initiate positions with the potential and greater returns. So, we're still finding attractive opportunities investing in announced M&A and do expect future deal activity will provide us with the ability to continue to generate non-correlated returns to the market.
A deal that that closed in the quarter for us was XL Group, which had agreed to be acquired by French insurer AXA on March 5th, 2018. So XL Group is a reinsurer that underwrites property, casualty, and specialty insurance and provides reinsurance products for other commercial buyers. And under terms of the agreement, XL shareholders were entitled to receive $57.60 cash a share, and this valued the transaction at about $15 billion. In addition, shareholders were entitled to receive XL's 22-cent quarterly dividend, so that totaled 44 cents over the life of the deal. And this transaction really followed a theme that we've talked about during this current wave of M&A, and that's cross-border deals where the buyer is seeking to grow into new and global markets. And there were a number of things that we liked about the deal. It was a fully financed, all-cash strategic transaction from a very high-quality buyer in AXA. The deal required a number of antitrust and state insurance approvals that we'd expected the deal would take about 6 months to complete. The merger agreement was very seller-friendly, meaning it was a strong merger agreement from Excel's side because it carved out virtually all of the uncontrollable events that could adversely impact the company and the deal. So this gave us a high degree of certainty that the transaction would close on its terms and that AXA was a motivated buyer committed to the deal. So we scaled in the position over the life of the deal, as we mentioned, is how we construct our portfolios. The life of the deal was 191 days, And as the companies cleared and received regulatory approvals, that made the deal closing more certain. We increased our size of the position in the fund. So the fund realized a weighted average annualized return of about 10.3% when the deal was successfully completed on September 12th. And then, as Ralph mentioned, a transaction I spoke about last quarter was CVS's $65 billion acquisition of health insurer Aetna. As he mentioned, it received Department of Justice approval in mid-October. This is really seen as the key hurdle to the transaction, given the Department of Justice previous opposition to AT&T Time Warner, which is a vertical transaction. This was similar in that it was a vertical transaction, but the DOJ approved the transaction once the parties agreed to sell their Medicare Part D prescription drug plans to WellCare Group. So over the last few weeks, we've attended a number of hearings in person in Connecticut and New York Department of Financial Services. We got good firsthand feedback from the regulators that the transaction was likely to be approved at the state levels. Connecticut did sign off on the eve of the New York hearing, and so now we just await a small handful of state regulatory approvals. New York appears to be on track, but that will likely be the long pull in the tent. California could be coming in the next couple of weeks here. And it's important to note that the California Attorney General signed on to the DOJ settlement, so we think that there's a positive read-through on that front. So as we sit today, the deal currently has about a 3.5% gross spread. We think that that is an attractive level for a deal that could close or should close by the end of the year, and more likely sooner than that. And in a similar vein, it's probably important to note some of the other positions in the fund. Ralph touched on Express Scripts Cigna, about 4.5% gross spread, so 20% plus annualized rate of return. Also just waiting on a couple of state insurance regulatory approvals. And then Rockwell Collins UTX, another deal that is in the pipeline, about 8% gross, and just waiting on the final regulatory approval there. But, you know, I think the important thing to highlight here is that these are deals which are built into our expected profit pipeline, and we think that the spreads really highlight how during periods of general market uncertainty and volatility, it gives us the opportunity to add and build positions at a larger expected return to the fund.
Well, this talked about a deal that has closed already, XL Group, and a couple of positions that are still in the fund, the healthcare deals in which we're invested. I'm going to talk about Shire, which is a company in which we still have an investment. This is Shire is a global specialty pharmaceutical company that agreed to be acquired by Takeda, the Japanese drug company, in April of this year. And for each Shire ADR that we own, we're going to get 2.5 shares of Takeda and $91 in cash. And based on those terms, Shire is trading at about a 10% outright discount to the value of the offer. Now, since the deal was announced, there's two issues that we've really focused on. One is antitrust, and the other is the Takeda shareholder vote. On the antitrust front, the regulatory approvals have gone really much faster than I think anyone expected when the deal was first announced. The last one is from the European Commission, which is due on November 6th. And when and if they get that, all the attention will turn then to the Takeda vote, which should be in December or January. Now, they need two-thirds of Takeda shareholders to vote in favor of the deal. We have met with management twice since the takeover was announced, and they appear fairly confident in terms of their ability to secure the vote. They stress the importance of the Takeda dividend to their shareholders, and they go through just how the Shire deal actually reinforces their ability to pay that dividend. They also talk about how scale is very important in today's consolidated healthcare market, and that they like the U.S. healthcare market best, that Shire gives them approval in that market. And I think, you know, one data point that we have is that the board is reelected annually, and at the last AGM, the CEO was elected with backing from 91% of the shareholders, and the CEO's vision, as he has clearly laid out, is that the future is a combined company with Shire, and so we think he does have backing from shareholders. And it's an investment we like. We acknowledge that there is risk around the Takeda vote, and we're monitoring that closely. But overall, we think we're being compensated here for the risk, just given where Shire trades relative to the terms. Jeff.
Thanks, Powell. Thanks, Willis. Thanks, Ralph. We'd be happy now to take this opportunity to take any questions you might have. Again, as the operator indicated, star one if you'd like to ask a question. Last quarter, you had noted several deals that were under a shadow of a quote-unquote trade war climate. Is this still a dynamic, a concern as part of your evaluation process and looking at transactions?
I'll start, I guess. We'll just open it up here, but it's a good question. Yeah, definitely still a risk and something that we have to continually monitor. I'd say since the last call, some have been better, especially in the wake of NXP essentially being blocked by Chinese regulators. Other similar deals, particularly this month, have widened as a concern that they could be the next one. One particular deal is Rockwell Collins UTX. There are differences between the transactions and why we think that this one eventually will get approval. But there's still obviously that risk. Now, some of the things that also have happened, there have been other deals that, you know, we had a much greater percentage of the portfolio that had exposure to those types of situations. But a lot of those have actually been cleared. A couple of those, Paula mentioned Shire, which recently received that approval. Praxair, which recently is in the last days of merging with Whiteline, that it's a U.S. company that also required that approval. And we think that in the similar, you know, Rockwell Collins UTX, and for that matter, Disney Fox, which also requires that, will also eventually get approved. They have, you know, very small amount of their business in those countries. Again, they don't have the same issues that we believe that were more specific to Qualcomm in that industry that had led to that. But it's definitely a risk, and as tensions rise, you know, one of the ways that they can, you know, weaponize or to impose restrictions against tariffs, since they can't really tariff much more on theirs, and is through, you know, through the enforcing or the antitrust process, which is the process that these deals are subject to. But again, there's nothing that right now we think again, as Willis mentioned, that the spreads are attractive and they should close. And some of them, I think, would also be a catalyst for other positions in the portfolios as well. Anyone else want to?
Yeah, so I would just add to that, you know, as Ralph said, it is a risk. It's certainly something we're focused on. It's maybe the biggest risk now when we look across the spectrum in terms of what could impact deals. You know, and we've tried to structure the portfolio in a way where we're not too exposed, and where we are exposed, it's in deals that we think maybe are not hot buttons, you know, as pertains to China, you know, where we have less than 15% of the portfolio in deals that need China approval, and the deals where we're bigger do not tend to be technology and other sectors that we think may be more at risk.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's important to highlight, specifically as it regards to Rockwell Collins United Technologies, is that, you know, where we had the non-approval of NXP, this was a deal where the remedies were behavioral. And Rockwell Collins UTX, we have structural remedies where they've agreed to sell, you know, business lines that include the de-icing of the wing systems, horizontal trim stabilizers. So these are structural remedies that should resolve any competition concerns. United Technologies had its conference call yesterday where they said that the delay in the DOJ approval has kind of pushed the timeline out a little bit. You know, I think we would say that if the approval drifts on and we don't get a clear sign that the transaction is going to be signed off on, then obviously we have to look at reevaluating the position size and limiting our exposure to that. But I think as it stands now, our expectations are that these are not a focus of the regulators. And as Ralph touched on, Linda Praxair being a U.S. corporation, received SAMR approval. So it's a regulatory body that is functioning. They are signing off on deals.
We would expect that to continue.
Thank you. One of the other questions that came in, there's actually a few on this topic regarding the upcoming midterm elections in the U.S. What can be expected depending on if the Republicans retain control or if the Democrats take one or both in relation to what we've seen recently as a somewhat pro-deal environment and some of the deregulation that we've become kind of accustomed to since the new administration came into power?
I guess I don't see much of a change. I think Republicans, if they increase their percentage, that it'll continue their agenda, which we've seen. And if Democrats take the House, as some people say, could increase the chance for gridlock, where really nothing else changes. So you probably get maybe status quo as well. So I don't see too much of an impact. I think as far as the regulatory bodies are structured, are put in place, it's not going to change that per se. I think you've seen a lot of deregulation already put in place, which I don't think will be rolled back, which has obviously been positive. The current tax reform has been a catalyst for deals, for repatriation being one of that, companies with more cash. There's been some carrot put out there that there could be further, personal tax cuts if Republicans increase. But again, I think either way, I don't think things will change dramatically.
Yeah, I mean, gridlock in a divided House tends to be good for markets. But I think at the moment it's more a little bit of an overhang in anticipation of the election. So if anything, just having that certainty of having the election over, we think should lead to more clarity and more decisiveness from CEOs in terms of transacting. So that should be a positive for us.
And maybe just getting past that, I think one of the overhangs as well with the to be in the market some of the trade rhetoric that's been going on. And if once we get past that, if there can be some more if there can be some kind of agreement at least being reached or getting towards, I think it would be positive, obviously, and I think even for deals, as I think you're starting to sense that some deals may be slowing, particularly in those sectors which require those countries or that are impacted by tariffs, as that's created more uncertainty, which the market obviously doesn't like. So I think if you get more certainty around those issues post-election particularly, I think that'll be beneficial as well.
Great, thank you. Another related question to the U.S. administration, that being the administration itself continues to express that short-term rates should not be on the rise at the current time. How will this impact, if at all, the portfolio or deal names?
I mean, we've spoken on this in the past. Rising rates are good for are generally good for ARB and good for our portfolio because our returns tend to be somewhat correlated with short-term rates. And in our view, it's likely that short-term rates continue to trend higher, and that's a positive.
Thank you. If there's no other questions on the line, I have one final one here that again was sent to us. More of a general question. What types of deals are you avoiding currently, if any, or more generally speaking, what deals do you tend to avoid?
I mean, we're doing nothing different than we've done in the past. This fund has a 34-year track record, and what we've always looked for are deals that are fully financed, strategic buyers, and regulatory hurdles that we think the companies will be able to overcome, and that's how we continue to position the portfolio.
Great. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for dialing in and joining us today. As you heard, we remain very excited about deals and the environment leading into 2019 and how we can continue to deliver to our partners non-correlated returns. Our team remains focused each and every day on all aspects of the M&A environment, aiming to be ahead of situations within our positions to invest opportunistically. As we have mentioned, our process is the same as when we began. It is proven and repeatable, and our objective, again, is to compound and preserve wealth over time. Investing alongside Gabelli offers investors a transparent and liquid alternative investment strategy, which provides diversification to traditional equity and fixed income portfolios. We oversee a range of merger portfolios across the full spectrum of structures, liquidity options, including tailored separate accounts, commingled onshore and offshore funds and within frameworks such as UCITS, as well as bespoke sub-advised accounts. As we continue to grow, we have maintained a strong background in operations and governance, supporting our platform since our firm's first investment mandate in 1977. We are available to discuss adding to your merger allocation with us or initiating a new investment. We are currently accepting subscriptions into all of our portfolio structures and are also available to provide segregated accounts. Thanks to all of those who have already confirmed their attendance to our annual arbitrage dinner in New York City on Tuesday, November 27th. Please contact us for any further detail. Also upcoming in November, on November 6th, we are releasing a new book entitled Merger Masters, Tales of Arbitrage. It's a collection of profiles of renowned merger investors and business leaders. Please contact us if you would like to receive a copy. As many of you know, this follows our first book over 18 years ago, Deals, Deals, and More Deals, which has recently been translated into Japanese, Chinese, and Italian. Our team can be reached in New York at +1-914-921-5135, and our team in London is also available at +44-203-206-2100. Thank you again for joining us today, and thank you for investing alongside our Partners Capital.
This concludes today's call. You may now disconnect.